Hello, it's Richard Herring here. Welcome to my podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. And my stand-up tour is about to begin. Can I have my ball back? First stand-up tour in 6 years. Many of you just know me from the podcast. Don't know, I've done 14 or 15 stand-up tours in my own right. I'm a brilliant stand-up comedian, and can I have my ball back? I think it's my best show ever. That's what the audiences are saying. It's about testicular cancer, but it's funny because testicles are funny even though cancer isn't. I'm really pleased with it. I'd love you to come and see it. Bring your friends. Some of the shows selling really well, some of them selling really badly. It's a traditional Richard Herring tour. But here's where I'm going to be. 2nd of May, Thursday at the Luton Hat Factory. It's a small venue, but there are still tickets left. 3rd of May, I'm at the Bury Hedge End, which is near Southampton. That's looking more full, but still some availability. 8th of May, I'm at the Leicester Square Theatre. There's about 10 tickets left for that one, though I am back at the Leicester Square Theatre in June. And then I'm at St Albans on the 9th, Gloucester on the 10th, Chorley Little Theatre on the 11th. That's sold out, but you can join the waiting list. And then the 12th of May, I'm at Glasgow. Afternoon show sold out. Evening show, extra show, put on, still with tickets. And then there's lots more. Go to richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs. And now, enjoy whatever podcast I've given you. It's free. It's all for you. If you want to pay me back, buy a book, come and see a show. That's all I've got to say to you. Love you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the New Town Theatre. Please welcome, man. I can't believe he's still at the Edinburgh Fringe. Just this can't still be going on. It's Richard Herring. You know I love it. Hello there. Look, usually there's 2 pages of notes for the opening monologue. Got half a page. Let's see how we go. So welcome. Thank you, Edinburgh. Love to see you. Welcome. This is a podcast recording. I hope you'll enjoy it. Welcome to Richard Herring's Ladybird Swarming Terrifyingly podcast. It's all about the 1976 Ladybird. I've changed direction, but sorry if you've listened to the podcast before. I just got a bit bored of interviewing comedians, so I thought I would talk to Ladybird experts about the famous 1976 Ladybird invasion. I was caught up in it myself. It was good. I once got off with a girl because I knew about it. She was a Ladybird expert. I'd like to meet her again. I'm married now. You can't go back, Liam. You can't go back. She was lovely. Hey, Lucy. Hope you're all right. Happy days. Oh, sorry. My internal monologue's just started. It's started leaking out. I was talking to the amazing Bubble Man. Oh, fuck, man, that is a cool show. That is a great show. Good. If you've got kids, if you haven't got kids, go as well. He can do incredible things with bubbles. He's the coolest man in the world. He calls it Rehalestopus. It is an amazing thing to see a man who's made a living just blowing bubbles. I mean, it's more than just blowing bubbles, but it's... A, Richard Osman would blow his shit if he saw how much merchandise that man was selling. I spent £20 on 2 little bubble flutes and some bubble stuff afterwards, and I want him to have that money because he's amazing. He can cover you in bubbles. He can send bubbles up to the ceiling. We're smoking them. It's the most. But like, imagine going back 1,000 years and telling people, yeah, in the future, a man will become a billionaire because he can blow some bits of soap around. Furious you'd be, wouldn't you? You're tilling the fields, clearing the stones, and there's just a man. So good luck to you. I hope he has made a lot of money. I'm not sure he has, but I hope he will. Joe the Joker of the Fringe has caused some controversy. Having a Joker the Fringe competition is a stupid thing. That's the initial controversy. Have a joke competition at any other time. The Edinburgh Fringe is the sort of antithesis of what is the best joke here. Yeah, but Olaf Falafel, who's a very funny comedian, has done a joke about... it's something like broccoli, cauliflower. Oh, I keep just shouting out random vegetables. I think I've got florets. That is the joke. That's the thing. I mean, most of them will get a groan. But he's in trouble with the Tourette's syndrome people. Because he's mocking Tourette's. But, like, it's true. Like, it's just a simple pun. I can see both sides of this story. But also, if it upsets people, it's just a stupid pun. Why fucking bother with it? But I'm glad to see Dave getting some kickback and their attempts to get some publicity going wrong. Both sides of the story. I can see both. We should be able to joke about anything. But, you know, if you're just doing a load of shit, just making wordplay, do wordplay about something else. Make it about Clarets instead. That I'd love that joke. I keep on eating broccoli to try and get my bad breath to go away. I think I've got Clarets. I mean, you then have to explain what Clarets were to anyone under 50. It's a much better joke as a result. And I won't respect the joke competition until where does a bird leave its sexual organs when it goes to a nightclub in the cloaca room? Until that wins, when that wins, then we'll know the best jokes. Anyway, let's crack on. Controversial that. Joke about cauliflower. So, the cauliflower manufacturers are terrible. Ian Cauliflower is very upset. My first guest today is probably best known for working at the bar at the Up the Creek Comedy Club. That's where you've seen him. He's moved on from there a little bit. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Rich Wilson!
Pull up, there's a mic there. Speak into that like it's a microphone and you'll be fine.
Hello, everyone.
It's Rich Wilson. Hey. I don't believe it. To be honest, it's on today. I realised you had the same name as Richard Wilson.
That's right, yeah.
I don't believe it.
That's why I changed it to Rich. Yeah, shortened it to Rich. Bamboozled everybody.
There are a lot of Rich Wilsons, though. Even I IMDb, I'm not sure you're even on there. I couldn't find you on IMDb.
Not on there, no.
Hence the barman thing, which we'll talk about in a sec. Are you ever confused with the production assistant from Bruce Springsteen's video Dancing in the Dark, Rich Wilson?
Constantly, yeah. Constantly.
Get a lot of offers to do it. Are you ever confused with the guy who did the show Racing Around the World, Rich Wilson?
The yachting guy?
Yeah.
Yeah, I do know of him. No, I've not Googled myself, thank you.
Are you ever confused with the still photographer on Whatever? And also the executive chef on Hotel Hell?
No.
There's loads of Rich
Wilson.
I think
there's a lounge singer stroke comedian out in America that's got my name as well.
Yeah,
he's smashing it.
Yeah. Based off you, but off the back of you. It is quite an interesting journey into comedy, because you were working at the bar in Up the Creek, which is like an amazing venue in
it
South
is.
London.
Yes.
Malcolm Hardy set it up.
That's it.
And it's a kind of renowned place, the Tunnel Club, and then were you involved at the Tunnel Club?
No, I was later on. I got there in, I was there 2001, I started there. Malcolm Hardy was still doing the Sunday nights.
Yeah,
there's all the weird and wonderful acts like the bastard son of Tommy Cooper, who should nail his bits to planks of wood. Yeah, I don't know if his dad would have approved of that. it was good.
Yeah. But you were working behind the bar.
I was working behind the bar, and comedians would come through. A comedian called Rob Rouse came through, and he said, "I think you could do this. I think you're funny." So I gave it a bash.
Yeah, Rob, who was a guest on the show quite recently, tried to make me like my own farts. Don't do what Rob. Don't do what Rob Rouse tells you to do. It's my advice, but you did.
I'm not going to do other people's material.
I've seen you. I'm a big fan of your as a club comedian. One of the absolute top club comedians. What I'm very excited to see is you've branched out and come to Edinburgh, which a lot of the guys, especially the middle-aged guys, and I think we can both safely call ourselves middle-aged.
Absolutely.
Are kind of suspicious of coming to Edinburgh and or dubious about the whole Edinburgh Fringe, but you've sort of embraced it, haven't you?
I think because my partner is Jade Adams, who, I don't know if you know her, she's at the Pleasance. And we've been going out for a few years now, and she was like, you know, come to Edinburgh, and by the way, because I'm smashing it, you have to smash it as well. So I can't really chill out and go, oh, I'm just going to do bits and pieces. I have to really go at it. She's quite the force.
Yeah.
So I have to embrace it or go home.
Yeah, well, that's good. But you know, but it's also good to see. I think there's a few comedians like the more kind of set in their ways. I'm doing the clubs and that's it. And there's a few of them have made that transition to either come to Edinburgh or do Radio 4 shows.
Yes.
And they work because you've got to be a really funny person.
Oh, absolutely.
To work again and again in those clubs. And I've done gigs with you, and I'm not a great 20-minute in a club comedian. And so you do gigs with someone like you go, fuck, that's how you do this. This is such a difficult thing. But a lot of those guys could stretch out and do the full hour.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. What I've learnt doing Edinburgh is that what I'm actually doing is just stretching out my 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And just chat a bit more to the audience. Like, hey, where are you from? All right, nice hair. And just, But I'll tell you what, though, what I have learnt from doing the clubs, because I've been in some of the really awful clubs where everyone's drunk and there's stags and hens and it's very combative. So I've found that coming up to Edinburgh, I have certain skills now, but sometimes I forget that this is a liberal arts festival.
Yeah.
And I come out and go, oh, wankers, what's going on? And they're like, oh, man, it's 1:30 in the afternoon. Chill out, mate. So you've got to find your balance. But I think I found it.
Yeah.
Yeah,
these people need to be told they're wankers.
Yeah,
they
I think
need
so.
To, they need to
I'm looking out now. Yeah, there's a few. There's a few.
There are a few.
Madam, sorry.
And of course, you're doing the podcast as well, which is again coming to podcasting is, you know, I think a lot of comics just think, oh well, I'm doing what I'm doing, but
yes.
To realise that there's that audience there for you, I think a lot of people have realised. Again, a lot of the Edinburgh comics have realised if you do a podcast,
yes.
You come to Edinburgh and you don't actually need to have done any telly or
no,
and you've got that audience there ready for you to go. So you've been in your podcast. Just did it start this year? Or
we started this year, so it's going about 5 months, 6 months now, and I think it's like 40,000 downloads.
Yeah,
it's called Insane in the Membrane, and it's talking about men's mental health. Oh yeah, it's all right. It's fun. We do talk about fun things. Although we were talking about suicide one episode, and laughing at the same time. And I got a few messages going, "Are you all right?" Yeah, I'm fine. We have to talk about these things. So there's a fun way of doing it, you know.
Yeah.
So
well, that's... I think, but that's, you know, men do need to talk about stuff, and men are bad at talking about stuff.
Oh, absolutely.
And you know, and there's two ways to go. One is to go, when's International Men's Day on Twitter?
Oh, I love that. I absolutely love that. I look forward to that day because we get messages going, herrings out. Anyway, we go.
But the other way is to kind of try and sort it out, because men do need. I think men are a bit confused about what their role is in the world. And it's very easy to go the other, you know, it's very easy to go the other way and go, right, I'm going to be a men's right activist.
Yeah.
But actually, you know, equality and all those things, and talking and taking care of yourself and moving with the times is actually a much healthier thing.
Absolutely. But I think the next generation will be the ones that are a bit more open.
Yeah.
Like we're sort of like the first generation of men to start talking about these things. And even now, it's still very difficult.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you know, when men first meet each other, once they've finished talking about football, that's it, really. They don't know what else to do. You know, I don't follow football, so a lot of men don't know how to talk to me. They're like, what's your team? I don't follow football. All right, bye. And then just sitting on my own chain. So,
but I think that's, you know, it's especially powerful when it comes. Yeah, Ricky Grover does a great podcast as well.
He does,
a similar. And it's a similar thing, I think, you know, in terms of that's a guy you wouldn't expect to open up. And Ricky's an absolute sweetheart.
Yeah, Ricky Grover, if you know him, he's a lovely guy. He was a bare-knuckle fighter
when he was
younger. He was from the travelling community, and so now he's talking about crying. It's excellent. It's excellent.
Yeah.
But it's like someone that sounds like me, you know, I'm a working-class man.
Yeah.
People don't ask my advice. They just ask if I can get them stuff. So me talking about, you know, feelings is quite... I mean, people do connect to it, you know.
Yeah.
I think it's important.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, doing great work, and I think it is important. And I think that's another thing that I like about you, because when I started doing stand-up, there was all sorts of guys from all sorts of backgrounds. I love that kind of...
Yes.
It was a level playing field, and there were guys from the docks, and there were guys... I went to Adelaide in 1997, you had like people like Parrot... is this Scottish comedian?
Oh, wow, Parrot, man.
But then you had someone like Ivor Dembina, who was a bank manager, you know,
and you're all
on the exact same level. But there were a lot more working class voices within the stand-up community.
Yes.
And I just don't think that happens. Well, because it's so hard to afford to live.
Well, it is. I think that's what someone said to me recently. It used to be a working class... it was a working class job, but now it's become a middle class hobby.
Yeah.
You know, and it is expensive up here. You know, I mean, we cost thousands.
Yeah.
I mean, I've got to be honest, my missus did an advert, so that's why I'm here. that's why I'm washing her underwear, because it's to pay her back. So, yeah, I wouldn't be here otherwise. But, I tell you what, it's, I've done the Free Fringe. When I first started coming up, I was doing the Free Fringe. And it's fine, and you get to do gigs and things like that. But this is my first time I've done paid. And it's such a, it is really different. People actually, you know, the industry takes notice of you.
Yeah.
You know, I'm here, and I've got to tell you how surreal this is. I'm not blowing smoke up your ass, but I grew up watching Lee and Herring, and now I'm sitting here, and in my head I'm just going like, fuck.
It's terrible that someone who looks as old and fucked as you could have grown up watching me.
No, I know. As I said it, I'm like, we were about a year or so out from each other. It wasn't like I was 3 years old. Oh, one day I want to be like the grown-ups.
I was very young when I was on TV. I was very, very...
Well, what were you? You were 11. I was 7.
Yeah. It was something along those lines.
As it came out, I'm like, we're about the same age. Anyway, thanks for having me.
It's all right. Fuck off. Not publicising it. Tell me about something. You've done other jobs first as well, which, again, I think is a thing that a lot of comedians haven't done, so that gives you this grounding to... have some stories as well. You worked in to tell Basil Brush asked about this, apparently.
Basil
about,
Brush.
About working, who's doing a chat show as well. A puppet can do my job. You used to work in a gay sauna.
I did work in a gay sauna. And Basil Brush, of all things, he said, so what went on in the gay sauna? I'm not telling Basil Brush the things I've seen.
Will you tell me?
I will tell you. Good, I don't know if this is a bit early. I'll tell you this, because there's a nice bit that happened in my show. So I tell this story that I end up working in a gay sauna. And, you know, because your sexuality is irrelevant, you know, it doesn't matter. As long as you, whatever you want to make love to, is old enough, willing or inanimate, it doesn't matter, right? And that's how I've lived my life. So I ended up, my friend got me the job. And I had kids very young, so I've done all manner of jobs. And my friend got me the job. And as he was leaving, he said, don't tell him that you're straight. So I had to pretend that I was gay in this environment. I had to make up this whole ridiculous story. Became friends with one of the guys in there. And then one day he said, I want to spend the night with you. And I was like, oh, shit, what am I going to do now? I need the job, need the money. What am I doing? I panicked, right? And I said, I don't want to say what I actually say in the show.
You can say anything like this.
I said, and I panicked, and I'm really sorry, right? But I said, you can nosh me off for 100 quid. Now, I'm not proud of that, Rich. I panicked. Please don't let me explain what nosh means. Please. So I told this story, and then the guy used to come in, and he'd be like, oh, if I had 100 quid. I'm like, I know. And then one day he came in with 100 quid. So anyway, we ended up in a cupboard. Because I just needed the money, I needed the job, so I ended up in this cupboard with this dude. And then, well, long story short, right? It was the easiest 200 quid. We did it twice, man. I'm not even gay. I think about him sometimes. I wonder what he's doing now. He had skills, man. He had skills. But what happened in the show, I was telling that story and there were two girls in the front and they were really laughing, like too much. As a comedian, as you know, sometimes if someone's laughing, you kind of go, what are you laughing at? Which is weird for a comedian to say, right? The minimum you want is laughter. And they were laughing really, they were laughing a lot. And I told the story, everyone laughed, it was all fine. Then I started telling stories about my sons, my two sons, and they lost their minds. They went crazy. But I went, what are you laughing at? And she said, I'm friends with your youngest son. So now I'm like, oh no, because I'm talking about being open and honest and things like that in the show. It's all about be yourself. If you've been a bit shit, don't worry. You can redeem yourself and all that. But I don't know if I wanted my son to know that story. Not because he's, you know, I'm a friend, but he's dad.
Yeah,
right?
It's a weird thing.
It's a weird thing to find out about your dad.
If my dad had done that, I'd be a little shocked.
It'd be odd, wouldn't you? Is your dad? Are you like your dad? I imagine that would be.
My dad's very straight-laced ex-headmaster, so. He's been with my mum since he was 13 years old.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So I'd be very... 70 years they've been together. I mean, they've got a telegram from the Queen. They've been married for 60 years. And so, so if he had...
imagine that now.
He'd suck someone off for 100 quid. I'd be quite surprised. But, you know, impressed as well.
He's got to boost his pension somehow. But I text my son after, because she said, I won't say anything. I'm like, I bet you do. And so I text my son, his name's Bailey, and I said, Bailey, how's it going, man? And he went, yeah, it's cool, Dad, all cool. I hear you have my friends in your show. yeah, I did, yeah. And he went, yeah, apparently you tell a story that you've never told me, Dad. so we need to have a chat when I come back. And he went, we certainly do, gay boy. At least it's out in the open, isn't it? At least it's out now. You know.
Yeah, well, it's weird. My kids are so young, and like someone was saying, I think Josie Long was saying, you know, when I'm slagging my kids off in here and pretending that I, you know, would rather they weren't here a lot. You know, by here I mean in the world. And going, what, you know, what if they've listened to these podcasts in 20 years' time? But that, you know, you've been very open about you talk about being a raver in the 80s and 90s.
Yeah.
And so that must be that difficult as a dad if you know, you've got to be honest with your kids about drugs and stuff.
Oh, man, yeah. Well, what's funny, what's interesting is that my lads have gone the other way. They've heard my stories. And I've said to them before, I said, would you want to go out and have a drink? And they're like, no, not really. Well, I don't know whether they don't want to hang out with me. Well, they're just not, they don't, I mean, the generation now, they're not getting out there like we used to, dancing in fields. I mean, when I look back, I'm like, oh, God, I'm glad I don't do that anymore. But the kids don't seem to be doing it. They have, you know, they have coffee meetings and they all talk about avocados and they're all nice. They have a nice time.
They must be doing something secret. We'll find out when they do their stand-up shows in 30 years' time. You're still alive.
It will, yeah. Oh, by the way, I was blimey. I don't know. I was described in my show the other day as being terrifyingly honest.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, I thought that was quite unusual because I've been a lying sack of shit most of my life. So there you go. Even now, I'm being too honest.
Yeah. But it's kind of, but that's what I love about stand-up is that when you do share the stuff, because you wouldn't, you know, that's a story you would go, God, I'll keep that to myself for my whole life.
Yeah.
I don't want people to know. And when you share it, you find out, A, either people will find it funny or don't mind, or B, that they'll go, oh yeah, I've done something along those lines.
Yeah. You know? Well, I tell you what, because when I first met Jade, and she said, have you ever done anything, you know, sexually, you know, out there? And I went, oh, well, there was this one time, this guy kind of touched my penis for £100. She's like, he touched it. I went, yeah, he just touched it. And I was watching comedian Sophie Whelan.
Yeah.
And I was watching her show, and she was talking about being a sex worker. And this was in the Soho Theatre in London, and everyone was collapsing and having a great time. I was laughing. I'm like, oh, there is humour in that. Yeah. There is in that. And I leant over to Jade, and I went, well, know that story? And she went, yeah. And I went, I said, he sucked it. She just went, really? You told me he touched it? I went, yeah, I know, sorry. Twice. Even now, she thinks there's more to the story. I'm like, I'm not a hero. That's it.
We'll see. It will come out. We'll see what comes out next.
Well, next show. Next show. Yeah.
Yeah, but that's, I mean, the honesty is a great thing, and you know, it's great to see. You know, I think the change in what I've seen of your stuff that's a big leap to make to be, A, coming to Edinburgh, and B, be doing stuff like that.
Well, it's watching people like Mark Maron, and some of the American comics that just they're very brutally honest. And I just thought, well, they seem very similar to me. Like they've lived a life. Like I got into comedy when I was 32, so I've lived a life before comedy. So I do see this as a privilege. And me coming up in front of everybody and sitting with you is like, wow, man, this is extra. You know, it's not. I can find humour in all the shitty things I've done.
Yeah.
All the odd things and the weird things, and it's nice because I get people going, I've done that. I was on ecstasy and me and John did a thing
but increasingly the world people are trying to hide, you know, trying to hide away what they've done. You've got to live these perfect lives where you've never made mistakes. And I think that's, you know, everyone's made mistakes. Done stupid things.
This is it.
That they, you know.
Yeah, this is why we did the podcast, you see, because just to let, because sometimes we all get intrusive thoughts, we all get weird thoughts. That's how your brain works. Like I use this example a lot. If someone gives you a baby, You might get a thought, you go, oh, I'm going to punt this over the shed. But you don't do it. You don't, that's the animal side of your brain. Because the other brain, just, the other bit of your brain goes, no, don't do that. This is what we look after these. And this all goes on in like seconds, split seconds. And we all have these weird thoughts. And from doing the podcast, I get messages all the time. People go, yeah, I get weird thoughts like that. But it's trying to remove the stigma.
Yeah.
It's like human beings are weird. We're all weird. We shouldn't even be here. It's a weird thing that we exist. You know what I mean? So, you know, just embrace the weirdness.
And do you think comedians, a lot of comedians are talking about mental health issues now. And do you think comedians have more problems or are they just, that they're talking about it? Or do you...
Absolutely, comedians are mad.
Yeah.
Why would we do this? Well, who in their right mind would need to stand in front of strangers and say, please love me? This is what we're doing, essentially. I mean, it's going to be quiet now, Rich.
It's all right.
I feel I've lost them. Maybe I've been too honest for this time of the day.
No, you like, they like it when it gets serious. It's good. They like it when it's serious.
That's the other thing as well, doing podcasts and interview things. I'm new to this, so yeah. I'm used to gigs. If I'm stood in front of people, my natural reaction is to try and make you laugh. And if you don't laugh, I feel like I've had a terrible time. So...
Thanks for that.
Me.
Look at that. They didn't even laugh then.
They didn't even laugh then.
That's how much they hate you. They want you to go off feeling bad.
Not even a sympathy laugh, Rich.
Not even that. Oh, even that. I don't feel bad, Rich.
Oh, no. Bless you. No, you're a dickhead. All right.
Yeah. So tell us about your show before I forget to ask about the details of that. So it's Death Becomes...
It's called Death Becomes Him, and it's basically... I thought it was way back in, well, I don't know when it is, it's in the end of the year, they sort of say to you, right, you want to put your show in, you've got to tell us what it's about. And you haven't even written it yet. So I called it Death Becomes Him. It's quite funny. You see a lot of shows up here, people talking about dead relatives and things like that. And I thought, it'd be quite funny if I talk about a show where I'm dead. I'm the dead one, right? And that's funny for 30 seconds. Then I had to write a whole show about it. But now it's me reassessing my life to see where I would go based on the things that I've done. Would I go to heaven? Would I go to hell? Mm-hmm. You know, do I believe in heaven and hell? Or would I come back? There's something else. So it's just, I tell the stories like I've told just now, and I've added some theatrics because it's Edinburgh.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny actually. I've got this at the end of the show, I say a certain line, and then the tech person knows to press the button, and all these lights come on. It becomes like heavenly noises. I had two people in on the first day from Lincoln, and they were sat right in the middle. And I know as I was getting to the line, I'm like, oh God. And I said the line, and all the lights come up. And just these two people from Lincoln just like going like that. So I wish I'd been behind them, see them in silhouette, just watching this like Jean-Michel Jarre thing going on. They're like, this is a bit much, isn't it, Gladys? You know what I mean? So yeah, 4:30 in the wee room in the Gilded Balloon. I'm on every day this week, so please come along. And it'll be lovely to see you.
I'll just quickly ask you a couple of emergency questions so people will be upset. This is the question I'm enjoying asking this Fringe, is if you could have... One, if you could take home one item from any art gallery or museum or anything in the world, you say that's yours, what one thing would you take home with you if you were allowed anything? It could be any kind of museum, any kind of art.
I saw in the Tate Modern, it was a single bed, but it was made out of the metal that they make service hall covers in the road.
Okay, yeah.
So it had the writing on it and all that. It was one of that. And I'd love to have that.
Okay.
And just put it in the spare room.
Yeah.
And then when people stay over, go, no, you're up there. And see how long it takes you to come and say, do you have anything else? So there was that. Yeah, I'd have that.
Good. This is quite a hard question. I don't know how I'd answer this, and I don't know why I came up with it. But I'm going
to. You don't know how you'd answer it.
I don't know how I'd answer it, and usually I have the answer to these myself, that's why. What is the least impressive thing you can spend a lot of money on? People spend a lot of money on that is actually because mostly people like flamboyantly spending money and you get something good out of it. What's the shittest thing you can spend a lot of money?
Shittest thing you can spend? Oh, blimey.
Yeah, it's quite hard.
That's a hard one, isn't it? Because I've spent having kids.
Yeah.
I've spent a lot of money on some absolute shit. Pokemon cards when they came out.
Yeah,
they came out and they were like 10 quid a packet. And I remember saying to my son, no. And he ended up with a whole folder full of them.
Yeah.
No idea where they've gone. No idea. But they're in the world somewhere. They haven't floated away. Apps as well for games. Or the add-ons for games. My son, like with the PlayStations and things like that. That's like a right granddad there. With the PlayStation thing. When they go, oh yeah, I need an app for that. And they go, how much is that? And they go, that's 20 quid. But there's nothing to see.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, so kids. I think kids, that's a lot of money. on something that's a bit shit.
Well, it's true, and there is when you add up the things you buy that just on a whim or that they want for on a whim, and then they don't play with at all.
Yep. Although I did this, you know, you get the sticker books. So you get sticker books with football and things like that. And it was when Batman, I think it was one of the Batman films came out, and I got them the sticker book. But I when I was a kid, I used to fantasize about having a whole box of stickers and just spending a day just putting the stickers in. And so I went off, and I knew someone working in a news agency. So I went, "Oh, have you got any?" And he went, "Yeah." And he gave me a whole box, and I took them home to the lads. I'm like, "There you go, boys." And I was talking to my son recently. I said, "Do you remember that sticker book?" He went, "Yeah, yeah." He goes, "You sort of ruined it, Dad, because you're supposed to go to school and do swapsies and things like that. It's quite an adventure." He goes, "You came in, plop, and ruined it." Well, yeah. Oh, there we are.
Yeah,
you've got, how old are yours now?
Four and coming up to two.
Four and two. Yeah. Oh, you've got so much hell in front of you.
I know.
Mine are 22 and 27. There, I am out of the woods, man.
They have to look after themselves now. Yeah, and she bought a magazine the other day just the last minute, and it had like a one pack of those Pokemon cards.
Oh,
so she didn't understand what they were, thank God, so I'll just chuck them away. But she tried to play a game. There's three cards, and she tried to play a game with them, and then go, "Oh, I think they probably want us to buy some more of those."
I know. Yeah, this is it. When you try and... Yeah, I know what you mean. When you try... who's got kids? Give me a cheer. When you want to... that's not really... That wasn't really like... Yeah, love it. That was like... Yeah, messed my life up.
Yeah.
It's the same reaction you say, "Who's on heroin?" They go, "Yeah, messed my life up." when you're sitting and they want to play a game, but they're making the game up as they go along.
Yeah.
And you're just sat there with the three cards. And they go, "Oh, now the rules are this." And then you go, "Okay." And they go, "No, not like that, Daddy." And you're like, "Go away." Yeah, good luck.
They're idiots. Thanks very much. Ladies and gentlemen, give a massive round of applause. Rich Wilson, don't believe it. Rich Wilson. Thank you very much. That's terrific. We have another guest in a second. I will just remind you that if you don't know, if you've got a free programme at the beginning here in the theatre, that's a gift from me to you. I'm making a collection for Scope after the show. Hopefully the ushers will have some buckets. If they don't, there'll probably be a bucket on my table where I sit in the foyer. If there isn't, just you could give me the money and I'll put it in a pile and put it in the bucket for you later. All the money's going to Scope, which is a brilliant charity that helps people with cerebral palsy. It's trying to get equal rights and access for disabled people. Don't have to give anything, though. It's just a voluntary thing if you feel like doing so. So that would be lovely. And I will be in the foyer after the show. I'm very happy to sign your programmes, do selfies, say hello. And I'm also selling emergency questions books. I've got the new emergency questions book. We're selling the last few of those at a knockdown price. I've got the old emergency questions book. That's a smaller one that'll fit in your handbag. And we've got some Rahulastapa week stickers. If you buy both books, you get the stickers for free, or you can just buy the stickers. But you don't have to buy anything. Come and say hello if you would like to. You can, if you're at home, you can buy those books online as well at gofosterstripe.com. Thank you for listening.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
My second guest today. Let's see what she's best known for. I've forgotten what she's best known for. She's been on before, so I tried to do a different one than before. She is best known for, obviously, I mean, I don't need to tell you. Oh, yes, a good one. She's best known for her appearance on, quote, unquote, on Radio 4 on the 21st of September 2015. That's what we're only going to be talking about. Will you please welcome Sarah Kendall, ladies and gentlemen? Sarah Kendall. Quote, unquote. Welcome. Sit down, have a microphone.
Thanks.
That's good. Do you remember being on quote, unquote?
I do. I remember it. It was at the Radio Theatre.
Yeah,
in
nice.
Yeah.
And was it Miles Kingston? Was it him doing it? Is that his name?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. And there was... I'll tell you what was very memorable from that.
Yeah.
Rebecca Front's dad was in the front row.
Right.
Sketching away.
Wow.
And you know, he did... Rubber Soul.
I do. He did. He drew Rubber Soul, the album.
He did. I know. And I just thought there was like just some strange guy at the front sketching, and I kind of made like a snippy dumb remark, and then everyone was like, "That's actually
it's my dad.
That's a legend."
Yeah, that's my dad.
That's how I warm up a room. Go after people's parents who are living legends.
Good. It was a great show. You were brilliant on. I think I did it twice, quote unquote, but I found it so annoying. I don't think I'd do it. It's a very twee show.
It is, and but it's something I must say as an Australian, it is just so uniquely British.
Yeah.
It's a really, like, in Australia, you'd never have a show like that.
No.
Yeah, because it's...
That's why Australia's good.
Yeah, yeah. Which is why Australia's unreal. Because we're not into words and shit. Yeah.
Anyway, I'd love to talk to you about that for the full half hour. So I'm going to. Let's see if we can squeeze another 25 minutes out of it. It's lovely to have you here. You've done the London show before. You've done the Edinburgh show before. We used to share... I was saying backstage, it's my golden period of the Edinburgh Fringe, the 3 or 4 years that me and Lucy Porter and Justin and your husband, before we were all married to each other.
Yes, before, and there were any babies on the scene.
Yeah.
We just lived in our pyjamas during the day, drank too much at night,
thought
we were tired. We actually, I remember at the time going, oh, mate, I am tired, having no idea what it was like to do shows and look after two children all day.
Yeah.
But that was fun. Yeah. And you had that disgusting blue robe. Do you remember you wore that dressing gown?
Thank you.
That was stiff.
I mean, I wouldn't say it was disgusting.
It was stiff with bodily fluids. That's how I...
And it was other people's bodily fluids. That's... I remember we tried to recreate Dirty Dancing in quite a small
kitchen.
So you had
dropped me on.
Yeah, well, we nearly broke each other's backs.
Yeah, I got dropped on a doorknob. You dropped me on a doorknob.
Thank you.
And I was so drunk, I sprang to life. And then the next day, there was just this dinner plate, puce-coloured dinner plate on my hip.
What fun we had! That should have been the show, shouldn't it?
Yeah.
Look
how electrified they are. Our stories of drunk people without children. I mean, they're loving it. It's great.
So tell me about this year. You've been doing storytelling and stuff, right?
Yeah, my storytelling and stuff.
Telling stories.
I do my storytelling.
Yeah. So this year's show is called Paper Planes.
It is, which I think, like most people, you do the title first and then work backwards.
Okay.
I don't think anybody has got the show written in December and then names it in January. Mm. I just thought Paper Planes was kind of cool. I knew I'd sort of be circling around aeroplanes and aviation, and I knew that was going to be some sort of theme or motif through the show.
So you've worked out where the best place, or you've been discussed the best place to sit in a plane.
I do talk about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, how do you know about that?
Well, because I've researched my subjects very thoroughly.
You have? Have you seen my show?
No. I've seen one person's show before the interview, which is Bryony Kimmings.
Right.
And that was really good, so I'm not going to go and see anyone else's shows. Because I'll have to go, it wasn't as good as Bryony Kimmings, mate.
Yeah, so, which is probably what would happen.
Probably what would
also
happen.
Because you've built up an immunity to me over the years. Yeah, there'd be nothing that I could do or say where you went, that really blew my mind. You know all my tricks. Like, all I would do is you go, it's just another one of your shows.
That's another one of your just talking about stuff.
Is that hair? There's a hair that it cannot be attached.
Is it coming out my eye?
It's coming, yeah, there you go. Thank you. It's driving me crazy. There you go.
It's the light coming, the ethereal light.
Yeah, it really caught the
light. So where is the best place to sit in a plane in the event of a plane crash?
The rear part of the plane, 5 rows or less from the nearest exit, reason being that often it's not the crash that kills people. It's not getting out of the crashed plane in time after the crash and people choking on the noxious fumes.
Okay.
So if you're 5 rows or less from the nearest exit, it means that you can get out before the crush of humans.
Right.
Of everyone trying to get off the airplane. Also, the risk of the aviation gas combusting.
Yeah.
You know, so you've got a window of about 90 seconds on average after a crash plane before you start to kind of get the after effects of the crash. So 90 seconds, so 5 rows or less. See, I'm not a nervous flyer, guys.
Don't most of the planes just sort of blow up?
No, they don't.
Okay.
No, they don't. Not necessarily. Okay. No. Air crash investigation is what... Bullseye was to us when we lived together.
Yeah.
That's my new bullseye. That's my new fixation.
Well, we've got Susan Murray on later in the week who's doing a whole show about this.
She is. She came to my show last night.
She, yeah.
And she, yeah, it's...
We'll talk more horrendous stories of plane crashes later. Have you ever been in any situation where the plane's...
No. And I've got a lot of aviation in my family. My grandfather was a fighter pilot and my dad flew planes. And I spent a lot of my childhood sort of at air shows. Don't go to air shows. Who goes to air shows? They're deadly.
They are
deadly.
Yeah.
But yes, so... And my parents, like... They'll see a plane go and go, oh yeah, it's a DC-10. Like it's just part of the sort of the lexicon of language in my family.
So is that nervousness? Is that come from just? I mean, it's a weird. I think when you get in a plane with my family now, you kind of think this could be the whole lot of us gone in one moment.
I'll tell you what it was. When I had my second child, I went a little bit bananas.
Okay.
And I started worrying about when you read things like, did you know that London's only got enough food for 6 days in the event? And then I found the responsibility of having kids that frightened me so much. I was like, what am I going to do? Like, I've got to think about someone other than myself.
Yeah.
And then I started reading all these urban survival manuals, and I went a bit nuts.
Yeah.
And I put away all these stores of dried food and. No.
Could be useful when Brexit happens, though, Sarah. You've still got them.
I know. You're laughing now, but and I had a backpack with antibiotics and paracetamol and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
But now my theory is, if anything like that happens, you're better off just dying in the first wave of people.
Yeah.
Having seen. Film. Sorry. Look. I mean, I'm not here to make it's not
a
feel-good
good
show.
It's not. Happening.
Yeah. But you know, when you see movies like The Road or read the book if you're British, you know, you sort of go, oh, like you're just better off getting killed in the first wave.
Yeah.
Like the worst thing you don't want to survive a nuclear blast. You want to be taken out in the first batch.
Or just a really long way away.
A long way away.
I would prefer that. I'd be in another country to where the nuclear blast is happening.
Sure, yeah. No, I get that too.
Rather than being in the middle of it. That's what, if I have a choice, I'd say, no, let's go right in the middle. If you go right in the middle, you're all right, aren't you?
Yeah.
You don't get hit if you're right in the middle. There's a bubble around you.
But that's exactly how it works, Richard.
Yeah.
You should have spoken to me when I lost my mind.
Yeah.
I also had a leather man. I had a knife with all these different... I went completely bonkers thinking I have got to keep my children alive in the event of a disaster. The responsibilities completely overwhelm me.
Yeah. It's difficult, isn't it? It does... I mean, it does drive you nuts.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, when you sort of
people don't talk. Brian's brilliant show is about going.
No, it sounds great. I hate hearing about how good other people's shows are. I loathe it. Like, I'd rather go and see a really shit show and feel good about myself.
Yeah.
I'd rather see a dreadful hour so I could be smug and go, my show shits all over this, than go and see something genuinely brilliant and just go, oh, great.
Yeah.
Oh, great.
Now I have to raise my game further.
Exactly.
To compete with this.
There's a story. There's one of my... I got really fascinated by this. This guy who survived the blast in Hiroshima. Mm. You know this story. It's unbelievable. Apparently there's about six people who this happened to. So this guy's working... I think he's working for Mitsubishi. And he was in Hiroshima. And all he knew was that there was this blinding flash of light. And then... complete darkness, and his skin was practically... No one had the language for what a nuclear bomb was. Anyway, so he survives it, and he's like, I've got to get back to my family, you know. So he gets on the train, goes back to his family in Nagasaki. Gets to Nagasaki, and everyone's going, mate, what happened to you? He's going, I don't know, there was a flash of light, and then everything was on fire, and the sky went dark, and they were like, this guy's crazy. And then he sees the flash of light again, and he thought it had followed him.
Yeah.
Like and he survived both blasts,
yeah.
And then went on to, he became a poet or something, and he went around doing a sort of...
Spider-Man, I think he was. I think he became Spider-Man.
That's... Yeah. So he had to harness his powers for good.
Yeah, that's unlucky. And that's the kind of thing that happens every now and again. People are caught up in another terrorist atrocity or another shooting, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And sort of feel, oh, it must be something about them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I loved his story. I mean, it was just an amazing story. And not only that, in the aftermath he really should have died from radiation poisoning.
Yeah.
And then he just got better. Like,
is it like when you get banged on the head and lose your memory? If it happens twice, you're all right.
Yes.
That's
yeah, it reverses the bang.
It does.
Yes. So the best prescription.
Skin went back on again.
Yeah. If only they'd known in Chernobyl.
Yeah.
Just
do another one.
Do another meltdown. Did you?
Oh, I'm glad we're laughing the most out of everyone. So that's why I like.
No, I'm niche.
You and I have a very, very peculiar sense of humour.
We should never do this. You are the worst person to do any public discussion with. Yeah. Did you watch Chernobyl?
I haven't seen it yet. I've started getting the point of watching anything that I can't bear. Like, I watched The Walking Dead, and all I want to happen is for them to be fine and create a new society and just watch that.
Oh.
I want the zombies to be wiped out and just to see them living in the city going, oh, phew, we sorted it out. And everything to go well. So even with fiction, I kind of do. I was watching Stranger Things. I just watched the first series of Stranger Things. I'm a little behind. And I just want it to be finished so it's all right. I don't want the...
Yeah.
I don't want...
Yeah.
And so I kind of can't stand watching real life stuff where I know there's no...
Right.
There's no way Chernobyl's turning out well, is
it? No. There's no respite. Yeah, you don't sort of get to the end of episode two and go, this is probably going to improve.
Unless the last five episodes are just showing the beautiful way that nature has taken over the city.
Don't Google that. Don't Google.
No.
Yeah, no. So, yeah.
But that thing of, you know, you're talking, I think again in your show you're talking about that idea of global warming and the way the world's going and... should we be having kids and how do you raise kids is what you're saying. But humanity's been through much worse stuff.
That's exactly. And there is the hubris of going, well, looks like we're the last people ever. Like, I do think that there is that. You know, I remember just reading it. There was just a World War II story and someone was describing, you know, the sky was on fire, the buildings were on fire, everyone's dead. You would think that that's Armageddon. You would kind of go, well, this is the end of us as people, and people kept going.
Yeah,
you know,
but living in... I just think of the people living on the savannah in, 70,000 years ago in Africa who would just, everyone would be... A few of you would get through to adulthood and a few of you would have kids and a few of those kids would survive childhood. Yeah. And, what we have now compared to that, where you just will live a horrible life where you might survive and then you die... You cut your leg and you die a horrific death.
Yeah.
We now live in imagine the world where you showed Bubble Man to those people first of all.
Oh,
and said, they go, look, they go, wow, it is good, but then they go, fuck, how does he make it, how's he getting by?
Right. Is that guy feeding his family off this? That would be their first question. Can he feed his tribe?
You know, the level of life we have and to survive all those things.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of... I sort of often think about all those people who've given their life, lived horrible, horrible, horrible lives in order for us to have quite nice lives for the last 100 years of humanity, and then we all die.
Yeah, and then we're super miserable on top of it.
Yeah.
Like, that's what I find is just the cruelest irony, is that we do have this incredible survival rate and we are just the most miserable versions of ourselves that have... I had this medical incident called a pilonidal sinus. Mm. Have I discussed this with you?
I think we might, but let's do it. It is good. So
it's a great butthole story.
It is. I love buttholes.
At an infected boil above my butt crack. And it's, like, really rare. Like, super rare. The doctor was stunned. He said, I've only ever seen this in very hairy men. I said, thank you. So it's pretty rare on a chick. And And then, so what it is, so a sinus is any opening on the body, and it's a tiny sinus over my coccyx that never, the skin never formed properly, and then like it got infected and it blew up to the size of my fist, and he had to lance it. And he said, and you know, I was on antibiotics and stuff, and he said, like, 100 years ago, this just would have killed you. Like,
yeah.
Imagine that just being the way you were just going about your life,
yeah.
Doing your shit, just being yourself, and then you got a boil on your butthole and died.
Yeah.
And that was the end of your story.
Happened a lot.
It happened a lot, Richard,
yeah.
So we're blessed.
We are very lucky. You know, and we're lucky to be in the position where losing kids would seem like a terrible, terrible, unlucky thing to happen.
As opposed to you have 15 on the understanding that 3 will survive. Yeah, yeah. Like, that used to be the kind of the math.
Yeah. They must have not... How did they get through? They must have just... Do you think people in the Victorian times loved their kids as much as we love our kids?
Nah.
Do you think, nah, just didn't care. Nah.
Their kids weren't as good as ours.
No, I think ours are better.
Ours are hilarious. They're cute, they're funny, they ask for stuff. I don't know. I do kind of think how... like. A lot of what my show is about is how do you deal with how much information we deal with? Because our brains are so hungry for it. We're so geared to latch on. And when my brain malfunctions, it's over things like aviation safety or the 6-day survival thing where my brain goes, all right, well, how do I game this? How do I take that piece of information and do something constructive with it? The thing is, we're drowning in information.
Yeah.
It's impossible to separate... You know, that's for me my struggle is that I really struggle to separate and prioritize and understand what the genuine threat is.
Sure, and I think maybe as a comedian as well, you are, you know, that's what how comedians work is we have to think we have to think things through, and that's the job. And so when you're getting that much information and some of it's bad, you're doing the same thing you do in creating something that's hopefully funny.
But also, I think that's part of. Like, I hate to, like, you know, and it certainly just occurred to me, but I think that I know that's part of what makes my shows funny.
Yeah.
So maybe I dive into it super enthusiastically and go, I'm just going to drive myself nuts and see what happens.
Yeah.
Like, I wouldn't put myself beyond doing something that cynical.
No. But I think you do, but, you know, that's what you have to do. You have to, you know, as a comedian, you're finding something. You don't know what it's going to be before you do it.
No.
I take stones off my local... field and trying to clear them to the edge, and I'm making a sort of lifelong podcast about that. Well, because to try and create some order, also just to be making myself useful.
Yeah. Are you depressed?
No.
That sounds like a depressed thing.
It's making me not depressed because at least my life has some meaning now.
I mean, that's all it is.
I mean, it's about moving away and understanding the fragility of life and the fact that as you get older you don't really have much of a purpose. I'm trying to give myself a purpose.
Yeah, you got to have a purpose.
But also, that's an idea I've thrown myself into, which at times I've thought, I mean, I am really doing this, so and I'm doing this when I'm not talking, when I'm not recording it, so I was doing it before, I still had the idea of doing comedy about it.
Yeah.
So I am mentally ill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you were recording it, then that's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, but if it's not recorded...
Yeah. You're trying to find that. And as a comedian, I think you have that thing where something bad happens, and a little bit is going, oh, this is bad, but most of you are going, this is brilliant.
Yeah.
This is next year's show.
I've got some depth.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is a thing. I do, though. I mean, I do think, you know, you also sort of get to an age, and it's certainly a sort of midlife crisis, where you're like, shit, what is the point of this? Because you spend so much of your life just partying and having fun, and then it all becomes quite serious. And then you kind of go, what am I actually doing? Like, it never occurred to me to question that in my 20s or my 30s.
Yeah.
And then you do start going, all right, I've got to make this count.
Yeah.
I don't know, and how do I make this count?
And it doesn't,
in the grand
scheme of things, it doesn't matter. No,
no.
The stones will always be there. That's the thing, Sarah. So what I'm doing is transcending anything you're doing, your puny ideas that will be here for 10, 20 years maximum.
Oh, yeah, look, you're collecting stones. You're collecting stones, craps on...
Yeah, those stones will be there in 1,000 years' time.
No,
so that means...
Will they?
Yeah.
Do you also...
Although, to be fair, the cairns I've made are sort of falling down a bit already, but...
I don't quite understand what you're talking about, but I'm not interested enough to ask. Okay. But, like, I don't want more details about this incredibly boring thing you're doing. But I also think there's a thing that you can't impart a meaningless existence to your children. You've got to put together a better story for them. You can't like look your kid in the eye and go, yeah, this is just a fucking monumental waste of time.
Yeah.
You can't do that to a child. So you've got to find some meaning so that then you can impart something.
That's true.
I think that that's a responsibility, along with stockpiling antibiotics and knives.
And, you know, we're very lucky to be here at all. We're very lucky to be here now, regardless of whatever else is.
It's a good time. It's a great time.
It's a good time to be alive, and it's impossible to be alive. It's so impossible to be alive, I don't believe any of us are alive.
Wow, where are you going with that?
Just think about it logically. The odds of you being here, even just like from when you were born.
As of all the sperm, all the sperm,
of all the
billions
sperm,
of sperm.
All the chances of everyone surviving long enough to procreate, the planet Earth having the conditions for life without being hit by asteroids recently enough.
Is this all your way of saying that it's a miracle that you and I know each other?
It is a kind of miracle that we've met.
That we've found each other.
And that we should be together forever.
And we could be doing it.
We should sit in thrones.
Should I have
just
sex
talk.
With me?
Yeah, let's do it now in front of these people. I have consent.
Someone just walked out on that. Yeah, we just had our first walkout. And we offered
some things are just too horrible to envisage. Tell me about your... You've got a sky... I was thinking of myself being involved, obviously.
I took that very
I'd love
personally.
To watch you making love with someone else. But I wouldn't want me in there spoiling the beauty of that.
Do you ever do that when you're talking to someone and imagine them wanking? Like, you're just talking to...
Well, I do now.
Yes. I do it all the time. Pretty much everyone I've ever known, I've looked at them and imagine them going at it. And then it makes me feel sick. I can't fucking look at them. Oh, that is the pits. Just one of those desperate wanks in the bathroom. You got 15 minutes. Oh, just rub one out. No one knows I'm here.
Yeah, it's a horrible. Humans are horrible.
Oh, it's awful. Yeah. I think masturbation is just an abomination. Yeah, do you realise that people would have been masturbating when atomic bombs went off?
Yeah, definitely.
That's a thought.
Yeah, that's the way I want to go.
Yeah,
that's where I'm going to find out whether the atomic bomb's going to fall, and I'm going to try and wank it so the bomb lands on my cock as I'm coming. The only way I'm prepared to die in a nuclear explosion. I think there's a chance if you manage that, you would become god of a new universe.
You would, that's how it works.
And the sperm would go into the explosion, create. That's where we came from.
That's what Scientology is based on. that's the story of how Xenu took over all the atomic bombs went into a volcano and they landed on his penis.
Yeah.
And that's why he runs the galaxy.
It could work. It's worth a try. It's worth a try.
Yeah.
Although I'd have to time it that precisely.
You'd have to time it. Yeah. Shit, you'd have to time it. I mean, that's a challenge right there. I'm having so much fun now. I was so bored for the first 15 minutes. And I thought, where's this going? We're not going to get anything out of this. I'm genuinely enjoying myself now. That's what I love about us.
Yeah.
We always get there eventually.
We do. Tell me, we've got 7 more minutes. Tell me about your Sky One new drama, Frayed.
It's about masturbating into a bomb. Yeah, that
could be next time. We can write that together. We've got a lot of great film ideas that we've got to get around to eventually. But let's talk about Frayed.
Yeah, this one is set in the 1980s, and it's about a woman who's living in London, and she's very, very wealthy. And her husband dies in an incident with a prostitute.
Okay.
And she finds out they're completely broke. And then it turns out she's not who she's pretending she is. And so she has
is
to
it
move.
Based on your real life
It's
story?
Totally what happened. Henry is dead and he died in an incident with a prostitute.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I shouldn't have broken
in
it.
In the 1980s
in
well.
The 80s. Yeah, which is weird. It's a bit of a, yeah. But no, the reason why is just I kind of, I live in southwest London and... there were just some terribly posh mums that, you just go, what's going on with you? There's a story there. You're just a little too, this is all just a bit finessed. And I just love taking the idea of someone doing that and just being like a skank who's just completely reconstructed themselves. And so that's sort of what my character is. You know, I'm from this shitty backwater in Australia and I just came to London and reinvented myself. So I land back in my shitty backwater with my airs and graces and my two kids.
Great. It sounds very good. Is that starting pretty soon?
Starts very soon. Starts in September And I had to do a sex scene.
Right.
Because I wrote it thinking it would never get made. You know, you write things on the understanding no one will ever finance this.
Yeah. Is it you wanking?
Yeah.
For half an hour.
Yeah.
Who did you have the sex scene with? Robert Webb?
No, not with Robert Webb. I did grab. I got to grab his crotch though.
Okay.
I did get to do that. No, it was with a, because I wrote this scene, it was like a really uncomfortable car sex scene.
Right.
And on the day of filming, I just sort of thought, what have I done?
Yeah.
What have I bloody done? Now I've got to do a sex scene. But
yeah. I did that, my thing, I had to do that, I quite liked it though.
What was your sex scene?
I had sex with someone well, it was loads, it was just, I was going out with the actress who was playing my girlfriend by the time I did by the time we did the sex scenes.
Okay.
So it was kind of it was all right.
Was it funny though?
Yeah, but because I think it's, you know, I never had sex against a tree.
No.
And I couldn't even really, and then my character also couldn't work out how you would do it, but I don't really know how you would do it. So.
No. Well, you'd have to have strong upper body strength.
Yeah, which I don't have.
You do not. No. I mean, you're very weak in the arms.
Yeah.
Well, maybe you could do it in a different... You don't have to face each... you know.
That's true. Yeah, you could do that. Yeah.
I mean, we can talk about... Let's just talk about that.
Yeah.
But you know what was terrible? The sex scene in the car was that... it's meant to be funny and uncomfortable.
Yeah, yeah.
But every time you watch it in the screen, you're like, oh, that's disgusting. Fuck. Yeah. Oh, that's really great. It's not funny. It just looks a bit, ugh.
And is that just you, though, or is that
maybe. Yeah. I might have a bad sex head.
Yeah.
And I've only just found out through filming my own TV show and doing a sex scene going, is that what I... Oh
yeah. Well, I'll watch it and I'll text you and let you know how sexy it is.
My head's bashing against a thing. Like that's the whole. You know.
If I get aroused, will I text you and say
I've fully got
aroused?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I'm wanking now.
Yeah.
Watching it.
Yeah. Do that.
Okay.
Yeah. Because that it would mean the world to me. Because I know you're pretty picky about what you will and won't masturbate to.
Yeah.
So. If I make it into like the top 80 things that you would jerk off to, what an honour.
This has been my favourite interview. So this is what every one of these should be.
Yeah.
Every single one. Tell us about your show and where it's on.
No.
Paper planes.
It doesn't matter.
Okay.
No one will come and see my show after this shit pit of an interview. I'm not going to sell a single fucking ticket.
Go see Bryony Kimmings. It's like, it's the same. It's a woman talking about stuff. It's the same.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's true.
Basically the same.
What we do is we get a bullet point sheet, an A4 bullet point sheet of topics to talk about.
Yeah.
And you get to choose 7. And then you build your... What's her show about?
Her show is about postnatal depression, moving out into the... It's so hard to describe. It's
just incredible.
It's really incredible.
Yeah.
But it's not. It's, you know, it's performance art. I mean, that's sort of... It's an interesting way you've moved across a genre. You're still doing comedy, but you're doing storytelling.
Yeah.
Like, you've had very good reviews, but I saw one review of yours. Do you read your reviews?
No, but go on.
But, like, going, it's story... The thing is it comedy? Is it storytelling? You go, it's both.
It doesn't matter.
It's not... Some bits aren't funny. You go, that's storytelling bits.
That's how it works.
Yeah.
I can't so, just... Yeah.
So, you, but that, you know, so, but the, yeah. the proper reviews have been very good.
Yeah. But yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Happens.
It's storytelling and comedy is sort of the same thing anyway. Comedy is storytelling.
I think
sometimes.
It matters. Yeah. I just think a show's either good or it isn't.
Yeah.
Like, I'll fucking watch anything. Like, but if it's good and I'm gripped and the person knows what they're doing, that's what I want. Yeah. I don't kind of go, what genre is this? it's either fucking good or it isn't. That's how entertainment works.
And you've won some awards. You're doing all right.
I've won a bunch of awards. And I'm going to list them now.
Yeah. You're on Radio 4.
And they're the big ones. I mean, not like the stupid ones that you've been nominated for.
Yeah. It's good.
I had something else to say then. I'm getting quite up on my high horse about that.
You've got minus 30 seconds. They haven't flashed a light on me yet, but they're about
to. What was the publication?
I think Fest. I mean, it was the one where you've had... I've seen all 4-star reviews.
Yeah.
but the Fest was a 3-star review because it wasn't. It wasn't what they were anticipating from a show that was comedy storytelling. They thought it should be funnier than it was.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fuck them. well, we have to wrap it up there, ladies and gentlemen. Please give a massive round of applause to the fantastic Sarah Kendall. She's not too many stories, not funny enough. You have been listening to Rahulastapa at the Edinburgh Fringe with me, Richard Herring. Thank you to Pest for providing the music. Thank you to everyone at the Newtown Theatre and the Stand, and everyone at GoFasterStripe.com. The producer is James Hingley. This is a Sky Potato Fuzz of GoFasterStripe.com production. Go to rahulastapa.co.uk to find out more. RichardHerring.com/gigs to find out who my guests are for the rest of the run.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great, too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Thanks for listening. Do come and see me on tour. RichardHerring.com/gigs is the easiest way to find out where I'm going. And GoFasterStripe.com, you can buy books and downloads. And just tell your friends about the podcast. If you can't make it to the tour show, if you don't want to buy any products, then every time you listen to an advert, you're helping us make more podcasts with a very, very tiny micro payment. So thank you very much for that. I love you all. It's lovely to meet you on tour, by the way. Hello to everyone who's said hello so far. Do come and say hello after the show if you enjoyed it, if you want to see me. That'd be nice. You can get a selfie. I don't care. I'm a selfie whore. All right, see you soon.